Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 1st of February 2015. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Nick from Partially Obstructed View, Gareth James and Web Cowgirl. We're now going to talk about The Hard Problem at the Dorfman Theatre, part of the National Theatre. This is a play by Tom Stoppard, his first at the National since 2002, when he did his trilogy of plays, The Coast of Utopia, and actually his first play since 2006, Rock and Roll, which was done at the Royal Court. This play is about Hillary. We first meet her as a graduate student. She's researching psychology, and she is quite an interesting character, and she gets a job at a brain science institute run by an investment fund manager who is immensely rich and can do things like invest in brain science clinics. Nick, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Possibly not surprisingly, given it's Stoppard, it's about quite a lot of academic issues. It's essentially about what is, I assume it's kind of a term that's given by psychologists, and not, Stoppard was just not feeling very imaginative when he titled the play. The Hard Problem is a specific problem, which is whether consciousness can be explained as part of the brain being kind of just matter, just being sort of a supercomputer. And on one level, really, the play is kind of 100 minutes of people discussing this problem. It's a bit more complex than that, and it's a bit more sophisticated than that, but actually not that much more sophisticated than that. So you've got this story of kind of spans quite a few years. So you kind of meet Hillary, who's played by Olivia Vinyl, when she's kind of not far from graduating from university. She's sort of having an on-off relationship with her tutor, Bike, who's played by Damian Maloney. And this is when she kind of starts to be interested in this issue of consciousness and how it kind of fits into what we know about evolution and the brain as a physical thing. So initially she has something of a spiritual side, which is fairly vaguely studied in the play, because she does sort of pray, but it's kind of suggested that she doesn't believe in it in quite a literal way. But she does have something of a spiritual side, which Spike is kind of contemptuous of, and he's very much of the opinion that there is no problem there in it. You know, the brain is just a collection of matter. It's a computer. The bulk of the story is once she graduates, she gets a job at this institute you were talking about, and with her immediate boss is a guy called Leo, played by Jonathan Coy, and he's also interested in the discussion that she's interested in. So I think that's kind of how she gets the job, and she becomes part of the institute. And as you say, the other major character in it is Jerry, who's played by Anthony Karp, and he's the sort of multimillionaire who owns and runs the place, but his money does come from hedge funds. So there is actually an element to the play where this is, I suppose, you know, as he hasn't written a play in 9 years, this is kind of Stoppard's stock market crash, credit crunch play as well, because that does become in there. It's kind of nicely performed by the cast, but I think the play is problematic. It's not, I'd heard some very bad things going in, because I went in after press night, and I think a lot of people had gone in for previews, and there was a lot of very disappointed people. So I think I was possibly expecting a lot worse than I got. I think individual scenes I found interesting, but I didn't think the whole thing held together very well. There's kind of a thing going on with the plot where what there is of a personal side to it or a plot side to it mirrors the discussions they're having. So, for instance, there's sort of a discussion about coincidence as defined by mathematics. And at the same time, we've got a story where Hillary is talking about the daughter she gave up for adoption and wondering where she is. And actually, she's kind of right under her nose all the time. So there's lots of little things like that. I kind of was hoping that the whole thing would tie up in a more satisfying way, which it never did. It kind of is in quite small doses. I think the other thing that's kind of frustrating about it is quite a common, it's something I do find with Stoppard, because he's not someone I kind of unreservedly love in the way that some people do. I think, you know, his characterization tends to be incredibly cold, and certainly with the two kind of characters in the center of this, Hillary and Spike, that they, you know, they're two actors who I've seen being much more engaging than this, but I don't think they've got a hell of a lot to work with here as far as being characters is concerned, as opposed to kind of being mouthpieces for differing opinions on this. The other thing about it, just before I tie up here is the frustrating thing about the staging is it's a little bit too simple. I mean, obviously it's the Dorfman, which used to be the Cottesloe, so there's it has to be slightly worse, more basic than in the other two houses. But I think we've seen some more involved stagings, even when it was the Cottesloe, and I imagine it's been technically improved quite a lot now that it's the Dorfman. So the staging is basically just a simple kind of almost bare stage. There's some scenery at the back that comes and goes, and there's the main kind of centerpiece is this hanging sort of light installation, which kind of mirrors brain functions and music. But the scene changes are very basic stagehands coming in a blackout to carry things on and off. And because there's quite a lot of scene changes, it does feel like that any kind of energy it picks up is just constantly being stopped by a blackout and a lengthy scene change. So that's quite frustrating as well. It's Nicholas Heitner's final directing job as artistic director, so it's not kind of the big explosive finale we might have hoped for from him, but it's not quite as bad as some people have made out, but it's certainly disappointing. Yeah, so I'd like to hear what Gareth thought of it.
I very much concur with most of that, really. I mean, it's a huge disappointment for me because, you know, this is a great playwright, although not as great as, I don't think he's as great as other people claim he is, but he is a great playwright, and the Kitten, of course, and the Dorfman, and one of those great spaces in London, but it just falls flat for me. I do blow hot and cold, I think, like you with Tom Stoppard anyway, but funnily enough, it's his later work I've enjoyed most. So I actually enjoyed The Coast of Utopia and Rock and Roll probably more than I did a lot of the other works. The works that I don't like are the sort of clever things like Travesties and Jumpers, which are just, you know, intellectual jigsaws, but they're a bit patronizing, really, because it's almost like a playwright saying, hey, I know a lot more than you do. And those are the plays I don't like. And this is kind of, this is going back to those, but not fully. So without the sort of sparkle that those works had, even though they annoyed me. So a bit of a damp squib, I think, really. There are sort of three things interweaving here, because you have this sort of debate about, you know, what consciousness is, and you have the personal story about Hillary, which I actually think is a bit contrived. And then you have the little bit of a nudge on the financial world, because the implication, I think, is that, you know, he's got this institution so that he can learn stuff that will help him make more money. So there's a kind of, you know, he's not funding it entirely altruistically. He's funding it for somewhat dubious, ethically dubious reasons, really. But it just...
He's certainly creaming off people, isn't he? He's kind of finding, he's picking out sort of the scientists who he thinks can make him money and can do these kind of computer simulations that he thinks will predict the market.
Yes, and I think, and that is the reason why he's invested this huge sum of money in this sort of world-beating institution. But it just, as you say, the scene changes just take too long, and then you kind of look up. Well, if you're sitting in the lower part, you look up at this wonderful light installation. So it distracts you doing the scene changes, but that's about the only point of it, I think. They seem to me to have spent all the money visually on this installation, and just what's happening on the stage isn't visually stimulating at all. And because it's not visually stimulating, and it's not, for me, it wasn't stimulating in terms of narrative and story as well, I just found it, frankly, all rather dull. And I didn't really care about any of the people. I mean, Stoppard doesn't, as you say, doesn't sort of do emotion much. And here, I mean, it just completely devoid of emotion. Even with characters, you know, even though you've got a sort of bit of a love story here and you've got a sort of somewhat moving, or what should be moving, personal story as well, but it's not moving. I mean, it doesn't move you emotionally one jot. So I was just really disappointed. And I went after the press night as well. And I just think it's a very sort of sad end to Nick Hedner's regime, really. I mean, it has been sort of going cold in the last year or so, but I thought, you know, he might pull something out to end it on, but sadly he hasn't. So a big disappointment, I'm afraid. And the first proper play in the Dorfman as well, because they obviously reconfigured it significantly for Here Lies Love. And I didn't feel, apart from more comfy seats, I didn't feel that we gained that much out of the Dorfman, really. Not in terms of the theatre, we've gained in terms of, as usual, bar and foyer space, but there you go. So, disappointed.
I always quite enjoyed Stoppard. I think I'm a much bigger fan than either of you two of his plays, because I do like the clever stuff, unfortunately. I don't think this was... I thought this was unfocused and not really well thought out, and I thought that
the central character of Hillary isn't enough. She's not, he hadn't worked out her character enough. And I saw it as, unfortunately, yet another one of these instances of Nicholas Heitner getting a famous playwright, a very famous playwright, and putting on substandard stuff by that famous playwright. We've seen it before with some of the Alan Bennett stuff he's put on and some of the Tony Harrison plays. I'm trying to think of another playwright offhand, but I have, you know, I seem to associate Nicholas Heitner with that kind of, yeah, yes, you know, you're a fantastic playwright, you're a, well, you know, you're one of our top playwrights, therefore I'm just going to put on your play and I'm not actually going to yell at you and say it's not good enough and it needs rewriting and you need to focus more and you need to, you know, be more focused on the characters and you need to bring stuff out, which I don't think has been happening under Nicholas Heitner. I don't know if he's going to change, but it does seem to me that that's what's been happening with some of the plays, especially by the you know, the what you might call the greats in playwriting. He's not challenging them enough. I mean, he's put, you know, he put on great plays by younger playwrights and has done some very good work, but just, you know, almost it's with his mates, he's not pushing hard enough with them. And I think that's a case here, that he's really not pushed hard enough back at Tom Stoppard to really get a much more focused play and a much almost a clearer play and working out what Tom Stoppard wants to do, because there is something in what they say in the whole idea of these hedge funds, which were making enormous amounts of money, but knew that at the moment the market turned, they would lose everything. There is stuff to be done with the whole idea of the mind and the brain and the differences between those two things, and whether it's mechanistic or whether it is some kind of divine spark. There's lots of interesting stuff going on there, but it's just, for me, it wasn't focused enough, and I don't think he'd worked out the character of Hillary, and you really need to feel that you know her by the end of this play, and I don't think you do. It's a disappointment, but it wasn't terrible, but I think it was a disappointment.
Nick Heitner isn't attached to Tom Stoppard in the same way as he's attached to Alan Bennett, though. He doesn't sort of do all his work as he does with Alan Bennett. But the point you make, I would also say, and this is, well, I'm the oldest, so I'm entitled to say it. I think that playwrights who continue to write into their late 70s, which is what, you know, this is Tom Stoppard's age now, do need to think about, you know, maybe they have lost their sparkle and maybe they're kind of tarnishing their reputation a bit by producing inferior work late in their careers. I mean, the sad one for me was my playwriting hero, Arthur Miller, who in the last few years in his 70s, you know, produced really disappointing stuff like Resurrection Blues, Peter's Connections and things like that. And, you know, it would have been better if he'd kind of stopped and you know, we remembered him entirely for the rest of a great, great body of work. And I wonder whether the best advice to Stoppard might have been, look, just go and put your feet up, because it looks like as if he has lost his sparkle, sad to say. But to lose your sparkle, you know, as the closing production of the artistic director of the National Theatre, as the first play in its new theatre, is a bit high profile. And maybe that's also part of the disappointment, really. Sorry to be ageist about it, but, you know, we have a playwright who's probably should have retired, really.
We're now going to talk about Dara at the National Theatre. This is at the Littleton. This is an adaptation of Shahid Nadim's play, originally performed by the Ajoka Theatre in Pakistan. It's been adapted by Tanya Ronda and is directed by Nadia Fall. This play tells the story of Dara, who is the eldest son and crown prince of Shah Jahan, one of the great Mughal emperors, I think the third Mughal emperor, and the man who built the Taj Mahal. And the play deals with Dara's intrigues and battles with his brother Aurangzeb. And Aurangzeb is a name I know well, so once I understood the situation, I kind of knew what was going to happen at the end of this play, and it did. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, as you say, it's a slice of 17th century Asian subcontinent history. It's the Mughal Empire. And it's a war of succession. Emperor Shah Jahan has got four sons, of which Dara and Aurangzeb are two. Dara, being the eldest, would have been expected perhaps to be the successor, but he's gone a bit spiritual. He's become a Sufi, he writes poems, he preaches tolerance. And his brother challenges him, and hence the war of succession. But it's more than that, because it's also a debate about the polar ends of the Islamic faith, really. So we move back and forth from Shah Jahan's early years, around the time he's getting married, right through to his successor's death. So it's almost a century of history that's here, but most of it is focused on the point of the succession itself. There are a lot of short scenes in lots of different locations, and then there's one really long scene at the end of Act One, which is the core of the play, really. And this scene is a court scene, a Sharia court scene, where Dara is being tried for apostasy, and his brother Aurangzeb, who's clearly set this up, is kind of hiding behind the prosecutors and the mullahs. And that's the core of the play. And that actually is an extraordinary debate, because it's basically a debate that still rages in this country now, 350 years later, and in almost every country in the world, because it's the debate, you know, of moderate versus fundamentalist. That's the debate. All of this is played out on the most, I mean, visually, it's absolutely sumptuous, absolutely sumptuous. I mean, Katrina Lindsay has created, obviously not marble itself, but created this set of white marble floors and walls and steps. And then she's put these black metallic lattice screens, which move to change scenes. And above all else, visually, it has the most gorgeous costumes, extraordinarily gorgeous costumes. So visually, it's absolutely a feast. I mean, it really does look wonderful. It's like those sort of characters in those silk painting miniatures of the period who kind of, you know, walked off the paintings and come alive on the Littleton stage, really. They do project onto the lattice screens. They project the location and the time of the scenes. But the problem with that is you can't always see them. So that caused a bit of confusion for me, particularly in the first half an hour or so, when I was really struggling to know, well, where are we now then, as it's hopping back and forth quite quickly. That's something I think they need to correct, although I saw it after press night, so clearly they haven't corrected it. And I think the core scene, because it is so dominant in the play, actually imbalances the play. It's so meaty that it imbalances the play, and the rest of it, in comparison, feels a bit rushed, although the scene itself probably feels a little bit long and maybe a touch overwrought as well, and not a little bit contrived, perhaps. So I think the structure could be better for me, and the writing could be better for me. And there was a kind of, I didn't feel the night I went, the cast, it was the night after the press night, sort of seemed to have their heart in it a bit. So it just sort of didn't seem to flow as well as perhaps it could have done. But I'm sure that was just on the night, really. But, you know, it's a slice of history I don't know much about, and we don't hear much about. And I think it's a really interesting period to put on stage, particularly here in, you know, 2015. It's on the sort of the scale that only the NT can do. I don't think anybody else could even attempt something like this, and does look absolutely gorgeous. So I was very pleased I went. It's a very worthwhile kind of evening, but I think it could have been better. The play itself could have been better if it had been looked at in terms of structure and sort of maybe had a sort of more critical view of it as a piece of writing, really. It seems to have lost 20 minutes since the previews, because actually it was only 2.5 hours the night after the press night, whereas the programmes and everything else were saying it was more like 2 hours and 50 minutes. So I wonder whether in cutting they've kind of perhaps even created some of that imbalance problem. But I don't know, because I've only seen the 2.5 hour version. But, you know, in comparison with other things we see at the National, it's absolutely the sort of thing they should be putting on, and I'm glad they did.
I saw it the night before you did. No, I saw it a few nights before, and they had already trimmed it down quite a bit. So I think it's a bit of a blessing, because there's, if you exclude the core trial scene, the rest of it tends to go by in slices that almost feel like sort of soap opera-esque, just going from, you know, one argument to another, drama, drama, drama. I mean, of course, we're watching a drama, but it didn't seem to have a lot of time in any of the scenes for character development. And I wondered if the original play maybe was even 4 or 5 hours long, and it was cut down really, really far from that. Or perhaps it was originally meant for people who really enjoy watching intense, long family dramas, perhaps on TV. And so this was a format that was suited for them. I really liked this play quite a lot, and I think your comment that it's sort of the thing that the National should be doing is absolutely right. But I kind of come at it from two different points. first of all, well, this is the kind of play that I would expect people would enjoy going to, because it's a play about kings. It's a play about dueling brothers. I think in some ways it's kind of a mate to the James plays. I think the timing is actually similar for some of it. And to see what's going on around the world as the same kind of dynastic battles go on was absolutely fascinating. And the playwright did a really good job of making these fights between two brothers seem intimate and about personalities rather than kingdoms battling against each other. And I really enjoyed how the two characters of the brothers really came to life. However, I think it's a bit unfortunate that the younger brother, Aurangzeb, really didn't come off like a very well-rounded person. Of course, he's being portrayed, I suppose, accurately as a religious, narrow interpretation, I don't want to call names, sort of person. But I wonder if the inability to make him into a fully rounded creature was the fault of the playwright, or actually a choice to make it easier for us, the audience, to decide who we wanted to cheer for. But aside from the fact that I thought, you know, this is the right kind of thing for the National to be doing, one of the things that really made me happy about this, them doing this play, is the debate quite recently about the lack of diversity in English theater audiences that came up during December. The comment was made at the time that seeing theater is something that is in white people's DNA, which is obviously not true. My belief is that we've got a bit of a problem with shows not being designed for attracting wider audiences. And I mean, of course, there is another play on at the National right now that takes place in India, but this play, a play of kings set in India, I've never seen anything that's looked at kings outside of Europe. And I thought this was really exciting for them to choose a play that in some ways would help extend the National's audience by showing different stories and yet familiar stories because of it, you know, being about kings and stuff. And the audience was actually more South Asian than I've ever seen at the National. And I thought that was really exciting. But this play was written a few years ago, and the debates that it has in it about religious tolerance and religious narrow-mindedness are cast in a way that makes it utterly relevant to modern-day thinking people, especially in the wake of Charlie Hebdo. Do you want a, as it were, kingdom in which all people are respected? And as the argument that Dara makes is that becomes stronger and has less bloodshed because every member of the kingdom is treated with value and respect? Or do you want a kingdom in which you exclude certain people and drive them out and destroy their arts and destroy their religious beliefs in order to be more closely adhering to the ruling powers' belief in what the one right path is? They mention in the play, in the notes, something about carrying forward Dara's vision of the world. And it's impossible to look at the courtroom scene and not see it as the playwright's attempt to speak to us about a vision for a more unified world. And that, I think, in particular, is what made that scene so touching and relevant. Even though it was a long scene, I was hanging on every word, and I absolutely loved it. I wish that the performances of the rest of the cast was as strong as performance for Zubin Varla as Dara, because he was charismatic. Everything that he said, You just wanted to cheer him. But the sisters and the emperor both came off as two-dimensional. And I think it would have made the fights between the brothers much more touching if we could have seen their strengths and weaknesses on the stage. But as it stands, this is a fantastic play. It's perfect for right now. And I was really excited that I could be a part of it by coming to watch it.
I mean, I think the National's been very good at sort of putting plays from or about other cultures on its stages. I mean, at the moment it's got Behind the Beautiful Forevers, which is also obviously not written by somebody from the Asian subcontinent, but is about that, is there as well. And in the past, things more contemporary things like Rafter Rafter have been there as well. So I think they've done a good job in staging those sort of things. And I think this continues that kind of trend. But it's a very different piece, I think, to any of the others they've done. And I think that's probably because it originates in the work of a Pakistani writer, albeit it has been adapted and indeed is effectively coming from their equivalent of the National Theatre, if there's such a thing.
But yeah, I would like to see partnerships with the National and other theatres in its peer group around the world and have stuff like this coming more regularly, because it was really, I think, just perfect for the London audience, and perfect Great Britain as a play that is being presented, you know, on our premiere stage.
Many years ago, I think it was probably late 80s, I've forgotten the name of the lady now, when there was a woman in the National who was specifically focused on bringing in work from other places. They had a season, which I thought was going to be repeated, where they had, you know, they had the Ninagawa coming from Japan, they had Peter Stein's company from Germany. So they had companies coming in, really big companies, for just a week to do a piece of work. And I think there were five that year, and it was just terrific. I mean, you know, it was Hamlet from Sweden with Ingmar Bergman was the one I remember. So it'd be great if they could do that again. It doesn't have to sort of fill up the national stages all year, but if they just, you know, if they just had 2 or 3 weeks of this in a year, I think it would be a great thing to do. I have to confess, I was a bit disappointed at the announcements this week of the first season, because it did seem to me a bit too much more of the same and not enough kind of freshness about it. I don't know why anybody else thinks about it. Tim, I mean, we haven't even asked you about Dara, because you've seen Dara as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I think I'm more or less of a mixture of you. I was, at the time, very impressed by it, but I can see why there may be complaints. But I think I saw the full 3-hour version of it. And it does kind of lose a little bit of pace after that big courtroom scene, because you kind of know what's going to happen. So everything, it just spends its second half just getting to the point of them getting rid of Dara, it's a bit of a spoiler there, but the idea that you're not really exploring anything else and you're not really getting more insight into this sort of thing. You pretty much know the way it's going to go after the courtroom scene, and you just have to kind of wait for it. It doesn't really add anything tremendously. But I was very impressed by it on the first watch of it. I think that later the doubts begin to jump into you. But yeah, also on the point of the National doing other stuff, I mean, I thought it was a fairly interesting first season, this new season coming up. But I remember years ago, possibly about the third Hamlet I ever saw, seeing it at the National, one of the ones at the National, and it was the Romanian one that was early 90s. And this was, I think, shortly after Ceausescu had fallen. And the guy who played Hamlet, who's Ion Caramatru, I think it was, he was at the time an MP and a possible future Prime Minister of Romania at the time this particular Hamlet was taking place. That didn't come about, but it was a very interesting piece. And it's always interesting to see the companies. I mean, this is really something that the Barbican does at the moment, bringing in the international companies coming in to do plays, and the National doesn't do it that much. So it would certainly be an interesting thing to see.
I just remembered it was Thelma Holt who did that season, and it was 1987. And in fact, she did go on to continue to do international work, but not with the National. She went on and she brought all of Ninagawa's tours, I think, into the UK. And she's worked with other international companies in the West End of the Barbican and on regional tours. So I think it was very much Thelma Holt's thing But it would be nice to see some international companies at the National, wouldn't it? Even though they are, as you rightly say, the Barbican's doing a brilliant job of bringing international stuff in, but it'd be nice to see at the National, because you could then
a little summer season would be really great.
Yeah.
You know, throw some variety in the mix. Treat us like people that have diverse tastes and, you know, could use a little freshening up. That's what I say.
Yeah.
We're now going to talk about Bad Jews at the St. James's Theatre. This is a play by Joshua Harmon, which apparently did quite well in America on Broadway, but we haven't got too much information about that. It was a sellout last year at the Ustinov Studio, part of the Theatre of Bath, and it's come into the St. James's Theatre. It's a 90-minute show about a group of Jewish cousins. There's a girl and then two brothers. The girl, Daphna, is fanatically religious, and she is staying with her rather laid-back cousin. They're staying together because their grandfather has died, and Daphna, the religious one, wants a small piece of jewellery known as his kai. There's a rather interesting tale behind the kai. It's a very important family heirloom. It's a small gold pendant. It doesn't look like much, but as the grandfather was in the camps in Germany, he kept it all that time. Not quite in the Pulp Fiction way, but he certainly managed to keep it, and that's how he proposed to his wife, we find out. And she's rather keen on it because she sees herself as a protector of Judaism. And she's up against a couple of cousins, these brothers, who are rather laid back. One is a rather moody teenager who's being bullied by her because they're having to share a flat together during the funeral and while they sit shiver afterwards. It's a very difficult phrase, that. They are joined by the older brother, Liam, who's just returned, having missed the funeral, from skiing with his non-Jewish girlfriend, Melody. And they were in Aspen while their grandfather died, and Daphna is very upset about this and is trying to get this heirloom off them. And really, it degenerates into a massive fight where we get both couples, principally it is the older brother, Liam, and Daphna, who are fighting and struggling and trying to get the other two people, the younger brother and the girlfriend, on side as they sort of battle for wills over this heirloom and over history. It is rather uncomfortable, but it does get very funny and violent, and there's a lot of good language in this, and I found myself enjoying it a lot, although there were questions. I did have big questions about it. I mean, certainly there seems to be something. We didn't really get down to what the history was with Liam and Daphna. There seems to be something there, something that provokes their antagonism. They really seem to hate each other, and we're not entirely sure why. And it's that you seem to think that there's something going on there, and it's not really touched upon. So although I enjoyed it, I did think there was a few holes like that in there. What did you think about this, Nick?
I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a very cleverly put together play. I mean, yeah, it's possibly, you know, the plot's not 100% perfect, but I think it was very interesting. I think it's a very funny kind of sitcom setup, and I think it's very well done. It's very well performed. And you've got kind of these two characters in particular are particularly unlikable. You've got Liam, who's played by Ilan Goodman, and he's kind of the spoilt golden boy of the family. So I think really that's what's at the heart of the particular dislike that Daphna has for him. She's played by Jenna Organ. I think the most impressive thing really about Jenna Organ's performance is that you can continue watching her, and she's still interesting when her character is just so horrific, because she is one of these people who uses kind of her own piousness in an aggressive way. And I think that the backstory is that her side of the family is kind of the much poorer side of the family, so she's got kind of these issues with the golden boy. But I think from kind of the way she behaves to everybody, she's just someone who's argumentative and has kind of taken religion as the way that makes her right about everything, because she's kind of the pious one. She uses it as her kind of weapon of choice, that it kind of makes her justified in anything she does. And I think that's one of the interesting things about it, is that although there's plot-wise and character-wise, there's certain things, obviously, and title-wise, it's clearly a very specific to Judaism. In fact, what it has to say is pretty universal, and I think that there's sort of people of all religions who would come to mind with some of the things and some of the arguments that they have. And I think that's kind of what's interesting about it, is that it does manage to do a lot of, to put forward a lot of arguments about the positives and negatives of religion, and particularly the way it can destroy families, as it does here. It does here, obviously, in a extreme and for comic effect. But there is kind of some depth to what is in Joshua Harmon's script. And I think it's a really kind of snappy production. I think it's definitely been deserving of getting the transfer. I'm really glad it did. Michael Longhurst is directing it, and he's really kind of got the rhythms of it down very well, because it is kind of that little bit sort of heightened and extreme, could always bordering on violence. It could get a bit much, but I think it just stays entertaining and doesn't move over into becoming irritating and a bit too much. So, you know, I was generally very impressed with both the play and the production, and some really nice performances from all four of the actors. There's obviously, like I say, it's Jenna Organ and Ellen Goodman who have kind of the starring roles, really, and it's their clash that everything builds around. But the other two do get some very nice little moments as well. There's kind of continuous good work being done in the background by Joe Cohen, who's playing the one who just doesn't want to be there, who doesn't want to be in the middle of this massive argument, and is desperately trying to kind of disappear into the background. So there's some very sort of funny reactive acting from him. And Gina Bramhill as the Shiksa fiance has there's one kind of cringe making set piece moment she has that is really memorable. Yeah, I generally think it's well worth seeing.
It has to be said, I really did enjoy it, and I didn't really expect to, because I didn't really know too much about it, but it was enormous fun. And I mean, it's enormous fun and touching in all the right places.
Mm.
There is a particularly touching bit right at the end, which was rather undercut by somebody going, is there an interval to this behind me? And then started saying, well, he started talking, and it's a silent bit, and it's sort of 30 seconds before the end of the play. And
the thing with that is, well, luckily I had a better behaved performance than that. But as soon as that happened, I just thought, it had never occurred to me, but I bet people have done that. I bet the grandchildren, maybe not the children, but I bet the kind of the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors have done that. I bet there are people walking around with those at the moment, without kind of giving away what I'm talking about. As soon as he started showing that, as you say, it's a silent scene, I immediately thought, oh, that I bet people have done that.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.